The following is a Sirius Sports presentation.
And right now it's time to take out the jams, motherfucker! Kick out the jam! Yes! Kick out the jam!
Welcome back. We are from Tobacco Road. We are back here on the Walk On Podcast. Chip Patterson with me. I am Hayes Permar. Chip. We did it. We're back.
I cannot believe they invited us back for another one. But we thank Matt and Ben. These are a lot of walk-on shows provided for the listeners.
I can believe it. I was a little miffed when they referred to us as guest hosts, as if we might not make it back for another one, as if it might be a trial run.
I can live life on the edge. You know, it's almost like there's no guarantee. You're playing... You're playing as if you don't have the starting job locked up. You are,
no,
you know.
No.
All right, I want
guarantees. I want. I don't want a 1 year renewable scholarship. A one podcast renewable. I want a multiple podcast.
Can I get in? All right. So we're only a couple seconds in. Here's my first football reference. Okay. You know that the competition just makes everyone
at
better.
At least we haven't hit WNBA yet.
The competition. This is spring football. Competition makes everyone better.
There we go. All right. The headline I think for today is all you can eat, baby, because that's what's happening in the NCAA. And I want to tie it into a man who I got to tip my cap to. And I don't know if somebody was in his ear about it or if it was all his own doing. But Shabazz Napier, in addition to leading his team to the NCAA title, ran an incredible PR campaign starting even before the podium on the NCAA at the NCAA tournament, but I don't think he mentioned the hunger. He mentioned Hungry Huskies,
right? Hungry
on
Huskies.
The podium, but he said that necessarily wasn't about the eating stuff. But I didn't realize. I thought he dropped the "Sometimes I go to bed at night hungry" line, and then everybody picked it up and ran with it. Now maybe people were continually asking him about it, but I've seen back-to-back clips of different times where it seems like he was putting the message out there of like, yo, I've gone to bed hungry. Yo, I've gone to bed hungry. Yo, I've gone to bed hungry, which I don't knock. That's what anybody trying to get a message across. Coaches play the same game.
Right.
You know, put a catchphrase and put it in the minds of people. So, I applaud him. And the NCAA, nobody wants to give them credit. To somebody's credit, they said, yo, we are not getting mantled with the NCAA is not allowing me to eat at night. So let's fix this real quick.
Oh, how can we easily fix this easily respond?
Quick.
Like if he had used a different phrase or hit a different topic.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you think that maybe NCAA comes back and
says,
if he's like, we work too hard. He's like, and the NCAA has reformed its like practice limits
Absolutely. Yeah. If his message had been, if he says, you know, if jokingly a beat reporter sees him too many times, is like, oh, did you see Captain America? And he's like, nah, man, I haven't been able to see a movie in 4 years. I can't afford to see movies. Then it would have been like, players get, you know, $40 every weekend
the laundry money.
They get that. It's like, you know, with some accountability of what it's for to make sure that it's not, you know, for beer, I guess.
Why
shouldn't it be? You
absolutely.
Know? But if he had said, yeah, I've never seen a movie, you know, I haven't seen a movie since the high school or whatever, you know, then that had been as over and over. Yeah, I think it would have been. But it's a lot more headline grabbing and fun and easy to make jokes about all you can eat, because it does. But the reality is, this does not change a lot about what is accorded to athletes, right? For your understanding,
right? Yes.
Ultimately,
yes.
Like colleges are not going to have to plan to triple their food allowance budget for athletes now because of this.
Right.
Correct.
Correct.
It's more of a PR thing. For
this is like one change, a little bit, but
it's mostly PR. Correct.
Yeah, this is it, from the way that I'm reading it is the beginning of what is going to be an entire summer of NCAA reform. This is just very, very small bits, and a little bit of it is just, in my eyes, not necessarily drastic reform as much as a couple of common sense tweaks. Is there not a rule that allows like athletes to get all the food they want? Well, most of them are able to get all the food they want, but it's technically against the rules, but it kind of gets hazy.
Right.
Well, you know what, NCAA, like you can stop worrying about, because before this, remember, was the cream cheese spread.
Right.
That was a couple weeks ago.
That was
famous. It was like, yeah, you can get all the cream cheese
all
you
the
want.
Spread you want.
And so what they're
snacks
doing
on, snacks on,
is
snacks.
They're just like the anti-NCAA group. And, you know, from the most visible, your Jay Billis types, you know, all the way down to the people that just type their brains away, putting together these epic, you know, take down columns. Like, you're not taking down the NCAA. Like,
right.
I don't need to read any more NCAA takedown columns.
I
would love to just see more common sense proposals, because that's kind of what I see from these NCAA legislation changes. You're just making the entire operation just make a little bit more sense, because the rules that were written in 1978 just don't apply to 2014. So they start with the PR wins, which is, we're giving you cream cheese, we're giving you unlimited meals.
Right.
And then the trickier ones will be some of the reform that is negotiated this summer amongst the presidents, both in how the power conferences may or may not be allowed to pass legislation regarding player stipends and other things of that sort, but then also to see if the player representatives on NCAA rules committees, like Chris Conley from the University of Georgia, will be one of the first student athletes to actually get to sit in the room with university presidents. It's a little bit of a step forward. Now, is he going to come back and be like, guys, they didn't call on me once, that's kind of what I'm interested to see. But you're right. As far as snack time, eat up, and all you can eat, definitely, I'm saying PR and political over actual change as far as NCAA rules go.
Well, and it'll be interesting. I mean, the big thing is, you know, when they say pay players, to me, a lot of times the point is often brought up is these changes, much like the everybody can eat. It doesn't mean that just the basketball team can now eat. You got to now feed all athletes. But again, it's still mostly a minor tweak in the grand scheme of things. I think that's one of the things. It's not fun. It's not popular to stand up on the side of, man, players get a lot, because the players we see and talk about the most are the ones that are getting the most screwed.
You know
what I mean?
Yes.
But in the large, and we don't talk about non-revenue sports because it's not a popular podcast, but those are also NCAA athletes, and number, just counting heads, they make up, you know, a whole lot of the athletes. And so I think that's why some of the moves are slow to happen, because it accounts for so many people, and that oftentimes people that are getting a better deal out of being a college athlete than the guys who are getting the short, which are the pro bound athletes and others who put severe injury and a whole lot of work, even non pro bound Division I athletes who, you know, an extraordinary amount of time and what others spent. And I don't want to get into parsing which sports are important, which ones aren't, but the fact of the matter is, there are also just a lot of sports whose sports don't generate revenue, and therefore they are getting a good deal to get gear, food, travel. You know,
at the University of Michigan, the number two athletic department in terms of revenue behind Texas, 70% of its budget is from football generated revenue,
right.
And basketball is probably another 20 or
right,
something like
right.
that. I mean, this, you're absolutely right on that front. I think I'm just glad that conversations are happening. That's always like, I don't have the answer. There is no right answer.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating when both sides, both the players and the NCAA, kind of, you know, they spike it and kind of make the crowd run to each side. In general, just glad that, you know, we're interested in examining that a rule might need to be changed.
All right, a couple quick hits on some other things. Calipari's on his book tour. It's amazing. It's funny that, you know, right now I was thinking about this in terms of the NCAA stuff. They say, well, these players like Johnny Manziel wouldn't be worth all this if he didn't have the platform of Texas A&M and Division One. Think about a guy like Calipari. We're basically like, if you're the coach of Kentucky, we can offer you this much. And basically, if you write a book, you're going to sell a million copies because you know what I mean? Like, the same advantages are built in for the coaches. Like, he's well-paid and he's guaranteed, a radio show if he wants to do a biography. Now, Cal's own success and his own personality will make it a bazillion-selling book as opposed to, anybody who's the coach of Kentucky could write a book their first season and probably sell.
And again, for the second podcast since we took over, just really – really strong authorship for him to be able to get this book together,
pull
it out and get
timing.
It. I mean, well and timed. Right during the season too. I mean, he is a time management maestro.
It'd be interesting. I will want to check it out. But he is what he, as we've said, he is a maestro at work, charming people and working an interview. And that's what he's been doing. I know Matt and Ben discussed the Bill O'Reilly interview. I thought was funny. His interview with Mike Francesca, there you go. And some New York guy. I don't know.
It's Italian. The soft C is Italian.
But he's in New York, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So
Chicken Francesche.
There we go. So Cal's with, he's talking about NBA guys, and Cal says, if I ever encouraged a guy to come back to school, because I really, even if I legitimately thought that's what he should do, then I'd get raked over the coals for being selfish and I'm just trying to win more, right? He's like, so I never tell guys that. I legitimately try and tell them what people in the NBA tell me, and then I say, you make your decision. And then Francesca says, and then I talk to the NBA players about my guys, and he says, what do you tell the NBA teams? And Cal goes, oh, I lie to them. I lie to them. He's like, I don't tell them the truth, which is absolutely what you say if you're trying to get the next batch of NBA-bound players, Gad. It's like, oh, yeah, I tell them all good things about, I work my guys hard and I yell at them, and then I tell every NBA team that they're the best player I've ever had.
That's part of the hustle as a recruiter, right? Like, you've got to say, you want your players to be drafted as highly as possible so that you can be like, oh, you want to look at those four first-rounders that were all from my school last year?
Now you can give me the credit on we went to the Final Four and so everybody thought you were great and they drafted you, or I talked you up. Whatever credit, you can give credit wherever, but you came here and you got drafted in the first round, and that's what I'm going on the street selling.
It may have been,
as he should,
Marvin Williams, Raymond Felton, and Sean May, but those were still three picks in the first like 15 or something like
that. Why can't Matt Doherty sell that he made those guys? Why can't Matt Doherty get
Matt Doherty
job?
can't claim Marvin.
I'll tell you what, you can, and not to knock people that are good NBA scouts, but you can always get a job as an NBA scout, because you could see some people just fall off benches places and just, you'd be a scout. Which I'm like, man, that'd be a great job. And I would love it. And I would like work really hard at it. And I don't know as much as Matt Doherty, but I know some. And then you could tell me the things that I'm looking for. Like, but I would travel around and watch games, right?
Would you? All right. So I think I'm with you. I don't want to dog on scouts. And clearly there is a hierarchy.
Sure.
Like there are.
You got to earn it to be known as great.
Right. But
there are a lot of people just hanging around.
Because I think for the most part, it's got to be just time. Time and the knowledge.
I guess. Did I tell you?
Watching tape. Because remember last year I told you I was getting really into tape? That takes much time.
I got no love for tape.
I sat down and diagrammed a football, play-by-play, all the same notes that coaches do. And that's takes so long.
I got no love for that. I will say this. Now, is this name-dropping or is this making for an interesting podcast when I say, when I was at the Duke Syracuse game, I happened to be sitting right behind Scottie Pippen, who I think was scouting, and I maybe asked him if he was scouting, and he sort of gave a half yes. He wasn't very talkative. But I looked over his shoulder at one point, and he was jotting down notes on, like, could play either guard. I mean, it was all cliche stuff so much that I couldn't even tell which players he was talking about. You know, it was like, shoots threes.
High upside. Yeah, like,
it was like,
come on, Scotty.
Could play either guard position, you know. Just, I mean, I wish I could remember more of the phrases, but I remember looking and being like, all right, he's definitely taking notes on players, and there's nothing that insightful there. And obviously, he's Scotty Pippen, and I'm not. And maybe, who knows? Part of scouting is a recruiting stuff with free agent. I don't know. I don't know what the layers are of the scout, and I'm sure you've got different scouts doing. Yeah. You got your college scout, and you know, whatever. But anyway, I'm offering my services.
I think your standard run of the mill scout probably knows the least about the actual players, as opposed to like a beat writer who would know a lot about the players and more about certain trends or tendencies, or like Chris Houston, the Heisman pundit.
Yep.
He does that. Like, I love Chris to death. And I think that if this does get back to him, I think I might've said it to his face.
I might own
but
it.
He's
maybe I don't, I might lie.
He sits there and he'll be like, oh God, look at his hips. Horrible football player. Look at his really hip. Yeah. Like little, and he's just trained that way where there's like hips, like, you know, certain movements. I understand.
Hips don't lie, dude.
I've heard.
He's on that Shakira, dude. He's on that Shakira, yeah. Dog.
All right. So, Hayes, you will be a scout.
The one thing I was, oh man, I had a great line and I totally forgot what it was. I was going to say, if I definitely know enough about basketball to get fired from a coaching position. And if that's all it takes to become a scout, I need to get the
position. You need to get on a bench. Yeah.
And once I could get that, I could definitely get fired. I know enough to think I know enough to get fired.
Is that any different from the sports media industry?
And then
you just need
scout.
One job to get fired from, but that one job is enough to at least shop yourself around?
I don't know. It's definitely enough to shop yourself around, sure. And then, just make some noise when you get fired and then claim that the noise was part of it. And then all of a sudden you're interesting and edgy. Yeah. And the internet, you can go get a startup job on a blog.
Will Leach will hire you for Sports on Earth.
Be edgy. Grantland will pick you up. Around the news category, Konzo, and I believe I just informed you, and I'm not knocking this because I was calling the guy Konzo until about 30 seconds before I had put him on the David Glenn show, and I was like, yeah, and he's like, oh, I'm glad I talked to you because it's Konzo, the guy who the middleman, the SID, and so I had no idea. Always thought it was Konzo. Is that a case where almost sort of everybody wins unless Tennessee gets a terrible hire? But
well, that's the question. You know, the popular sentiment is Tennessee got what it deserved, and because you've got these reports about the big money Tennessee boosters that at some point during the season kind of pulled their private planes and said, "Nah, you can't use these for basketball recruiting," because they and again, I don't think this is all the Tennessee fans. I think that a certain segment really was on the bring back Bruce Pearl train to a point where they were sabotaging Martin's basketball program.
Right.
And I think even if that's going on behind the scenes, it was clearly enough for even the players to recognize that he was not being treated well, because as soon as the news comes, you have the outpouring from Stokes, from Maimon, from Richardson. I mean, these are like major contributors that got this Tennessee team within a point of the Elite Eight.
Right.
And they were coming out and almost like giving me the impression that they were happy that he is in a better place, not necessarily at Cal, because Cal is no basketball juggernaut, but that he is in a better place because he's out of Knoxville.
Question I want to, that leads right to my question. Question that I won't make you answer, but you can if you want. Were they upset with the direction of the program and Konzo's coaching, or just his blackness?
the Tennessee.
Yeah, the boosters. Is it just, I don't know. At the time, we needed a coach, but he's still a black guy, and I don't know.
Almost, you know, until Kevin Sumlin and James Franklin came in, you know, SEC football, you know, was pretty bleached. It is certainly one thing that a lot of people have brought up. I don't know enough about the Tennessee beat except to know that it is such a sort of like starved and rabid fan base, and to have 11 changes at football coach, head basketball coach, or administrator.
Or women's. Well, they threw in Summit because that's a big change for that school. Right. You know? Well, I will say kudos to Konzo for landing on his feet in Cal. And also because this went mid-season where they started like grumbling on him, kudos to him for finishing the season. And he out the door and be like, peace.
That's my takeaway is he also looked at the roster coming back and knew that it wasn't. I mean, he's not getting, in my opinion, Tennessee, even with Martin back, is not a Sweet 16 team.
Right.
Obviously, was not a Sweet 16 team.
He gets to walk out.
And so he's like, man, I'm either going to get fired next. If that's what you get from the fan base and the administration,
absolutely.
There's no reason to think that if you come back and you miss the tournament,
they won't
fire
me now, but yeah, they're just going
to win. It's like, so I'm going to go out here to Cal. I'm going to take this money. I'm going to take this 7'1", 3-star center that I signed to Tennessee
picked him up on the way. where was that guy from?
Yeah, I've got it right here.
He
was from Phoenix.
He flew into. He was like, "Dude, meet me at the airport." He's like, "What are you gonna be? Are we flying back to Knoxville?" He's like, "No, we're gonna keep
to Berkeley.
We're gonna keep on moving. Trust me, it's gonna be better for both of us." Dude, kudos to him
because it happened fast. I mean, he even said, you know, this was like he was probably sitting there, and his agent, he just sort of gave him a line. He said, "Yes." Anything above this number, yes.
Yeah, number and
any major, major
and
conference.
Top five, Pac-10. I mean, Cal's been a good program at times in my life. Pac-12 is
winnable.
What do they call it? Pac-12?
It's the Pac-12. You look at, you've got a up and down UCLA. Oregon, which has kind of been
probably on
a good kick.
I'd say probably on the rise, UCLA. Oregon that's on a good stretch. You know, Washington that's been up and down a town. Arizona's obviously great.
Arizona State's
a stable, but they've never, they haven't been that great under Sindek.
How did we just not mention Arizona?
I guess
Sean Miller hasn't been there long enough for that one to be just like.
All right, coaching carousel season is also player carousel season now. Both in the college basketball world and the college football world. Are we moving towards an all or nothing? I feel like we've heard guys like Kay call for it. And I feel like it's almost time to just decide, hey, players could transfer every year just like any other student could transfer to another school if the school's willing to accept them and coaches can move year to year. Or were they just cut it back and say, all right, no, none of these transfers are happening, which I think may be impossible. But are we moving towards the all or nothing, which I guess I'm saying would have to be the all?
I think it's too late.
It's too late to go backwards.
I think that the...
Is it too late to stop it? Do you think we can, where it is now, where all right, there's a decent amount every year?
But yeah, I think that you've got it to the point, especially in basketball, where as a basketball coach, you're not looking to introduce more than like because you're trying to promise playing time. You imagine your rotation's about 7 or 8 players. You're not going to introduce more than 2 to 3 transfers in a season.
Right.
And so just by basic math.
Well, I think with the one and dones though, it depends. Like you may say, well, I'm not planning on taking any transfers, and then 3 dudes go, and you're like, all right, I'm looking for some transfers.
Michigan's gonna be looking for someone after they lost like everybody.
Exactly, and I should be, and I'm not more knowledgeable in exactly like how the dates overlap of when you can announce certain things and when you have to announce if you're transferring schools or leaving for the NBA or what or how they all intertwine. The other thing I'll say is I guess it's less about you've always been able to transfer, but you still have to sit out that year of eligibility and then you can play. But now more and more, I feel like they give exemptions for a lot more reasons.
You give a lot of exemptions, but even then, I think, every year you've got 25% to 30% of like major college basketball programs with – and so-and-so who's sitting on the bench but will be eligible next year. I mean, even sitting out a year, right. I think this is a transfer culture where from either, I don't know if it comes from the AAU, and this would be a great discussion topic if you want to hit us on Twitter or at Walk-Ons Podcast, at Chip_Patterson, or at DHPIV. You know, why, at what point did the player, the player's family, and the people around the play, like, what point did the mentality change to, are you not getting your way? Do you not feel like you've got your time to shine? All right, well, let's just go. And especially at basketball, as opposed to football, because it only happens at one position, not one position, but I think transfer culture really exists at the quarterback position, because at every other position on the football field, I think they know I've only got but X number of hits before my body breaks down.
Right.
In basketball, it gets spun to take a year off, work on your game, yeah, like, you know, go practice against your new teammates. And I think that it is impossible to do anything other than make it get worse.
All right.
I think even if you give I think even if you had guaranteed scholarships, you could not write the transfer rules such that they had to commit to you for three seasons.
Well, and some people say, and I don't want to go too far down this road, some people say that you know, if you are paying guys as athletes, then you could give them non-compete clauses and they have to accept it, just like other employees do.
Well, they get transfer restrictions.
They do, but they get nothing. But right. People are saying, yeah, I'd be okay with you making a guy sit out a year if he signed to play with you for X amount of years for X amount of money and he wants out of that. Then you say, well, sure, yeah, but you have to sit out a year like a radio guy would in a market, right, or whatever. So that, but you know, they're not, they feel like the players aren't getting their end, which is the guarantees of them being paid. But not to get into that, here's a perfect example of where life's complicated for the NCAA to do the right thing. The graduate transfer rule. Okay. So that, I could probably study the actual case where it became history, but it probably goes something like this. Legitimate student athlete, maybe an offensive lineman at Iowa that is studying something at Iowa and may be going to the NFL, but also is, you know, getting his degree in or whatever. Or maybe he's not going to the NFL and he knows it. He's just a pretty good starting offensive lineman, you know? And he gets his degree, but he redshirted, so he has a year of eligibility. And they say, well, you got to go to grad school. And he looks and he realizes he legitimately wants to get a degree, get a grad degree in
X. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not at Iowa.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, this is miserable that I should not be able to play football at Indiana when I go there, and they're the only one that have my program. So the NCAA says, you're right, that isn't fair. You should be able to play and pursue your thing. Well, now they've opened a loophole that is absolutely being exploited, and not to knock a guy like Russell Wilson, but great ones you do, but like famously by Russell Wilson, where it's like, who believes that he went to Wisconsin because the, you know, and then you have to pick a graduate program that's not at the
one you're at. It doesn't exist.
So you got to go look and see what are the best options of the ones that my school doesn't have that this school does. And when everybody knows, it's all about whether it's a basketball player who knows there's a good role for him on a team like at Michigan or whatever, you know, and they have to lie and say they're going there for that reason. So on the one hand, you applaud the NCAA because they probably made the rule for legitimate, like, man, they're you know, you should be able to do that. But then you get people that exploit it, and then the NCAA is now put in a position where they're forcing people to lie to abide by the rule. And yeah, I don't know.
Well,
who's in the wrong there? The people who are exploiting it, the NCAA that made the rule in good faith, but now are like backdooring people as long as they lie about why they're trying to do it, you know? So I don't know. I don't
the other hustle on the graduate transfer,
right,
is if you can finish your degree in with only using 2 years of eligibility. That's gotcha. The real gold mine. It's
you could go play somewhere for 2 years, which is what like Glennon would have had if Russell Wilson had stayed.
Because
Glennon could have had graduated, right? And he
was close.
I thought.
I don't remember where he was anyway at that time. But yeah, that's kind of why I wonder. I'm like, man, this has gotten so, this has gotten so big that I think even if you had guaranteed scholarships, it's gone too far to the point where we're not just going to all of a sudden come back off the ledge from this.
Does Kentucky even entertain transfers coming in?
Ryan Hara.
No, Oh, yeah, he came in, absolutely.
And then he
yeah.
left.
And then he left. I was like, I was about to say, no, he transferred out. I was like, no, no, he transferred in, too. Yeah, no, no, I guess they do. It seems like he would just be, like, all on that.
I mean,
leave as many scallies open as I can. I never know when that, I never know when that last guy in the top 10 is going to say, yeah, I'm Kentucky.
Did you see that that an Oregon, I think his name's Jonathan Lloyd, Oregon point guard Jonathan Lloyd is doing the Greg Paulus?
Changing sport.
Yeah, that's not a transfer, but that's a fun loophole.
Same school, different sport.
Yeah,
or different school, different sport.
Same school, different sport. But the actual loophole that Paulus used to play at Syracuse, he used the graduate degree loophole to be able
to
go to a different school.
He went multiple loopholes.
He went dub loopholes.
Dubs holes. He just went.
You in two holes. Yeah, Jonathan Lloyd is going to, a little like 5'9", scrappy point guard, going to be a nice little slot receiver.
Defensive back, slot receiver?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so he's played 4 years of basketball. And so for his final, he like gets like one bonus in another sport.
Right.
Like if it's something, that's a like calendar year thing. Like because the
exactly.
Ducks start this fall,
right.
He'll be able to do it.
That's fantastic.
Pretty interesting.
All right. Let's set it down. We'll be back soon on the walk-ons, and who knows who might be hosting it next.
Don't forget, subscribe on iTunes or Podomatic. Follow at Walk-Ons Podcast, and our thanks to Matt and Ben for letting us guest host.
Yeah, listen on Podomatic. It's expensive. We pay for that stuff now, man. Listen on there. Make use of it.
It's a serious sports joint. Thanks so much.
Now it's written and kitten, hitting with mittens. I'm missing, wishing, man, listen. I glisten like sun and water while fishing. Bust the move and it's word. Serve words with nerve embedded. I said it word. Damn, you nerd, man, you heard. Coming from the town of Illy and alleys are full of fillies and rallies. Suckers get silly and sally. Them found in alleys and rally. Really? So here we go. Now holla if you hear me though. Come and feel me. Flow. Never nixing with tricking brothers, bitching over fixes. That ain't fitting to be hitting for nothing. Spitting things is bitten and getting written off. You're like a fly by my try. How else could I say it when you play a try? Boom, bye 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 bye. Here we go now, holla if you hear me. Come and feel me flow. The flow pro poetical with skills only a better. No better, no is the weather. Flow that's on point like this.